Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 39, Akura's Vision, Text 53. Sunanda Nanda Pramukhai. Parshadai Sanakadibi Sureshaya Brahma Rudradhyaya Navabhischa Drijotamai Sunanda Nanda Pramukhai Parshadai Sanakadibi Sureshar Brahma Rudrajaya Navabhischa Drijotamai Sunanda Nanda Pramukhai Parshadai Sanakadibi Sureshar Brahma Rudrajaya Navabhischa Drijotamai. Vaishnavis. Sunanda Nanda Pramukhai. Headed by Sunanda and Nanda. Parshadai, by his personal attendants. Sanaka Adibi, by Sanaka Kumar and his brothers. Sura Ishai, by the chief demigods. Brahma Rudra Adhyai, headed by Brahma and Rudra. Navabhi, 9. Cha, and. Dvija Uttamai, by the chief brahmanas, headed by Marichi. Translation. Encircling the Lord and worshiping him. Actually, we'll start a few verses back. The river's sweet water was more effulgent than brilliant jewels. After Lord Krishna had touched it for purification, he drank some from his hand. Then he had the chariot move near a grove of trees and climb back on, along with Balaram. Akura asked the two lords to take their seats on the chariot. Then, taking their permission, he went to a pool in the Yamuna and took his bath as enjoined in the scriptures. While immersing himself in the water and reciting eternal mantras from the Vedas, Akura suddenly saw Balaram and Krishna before him. Akura thought, how can the two sons of Anakadundubhi, who are sitting in the chariot, be standing in the water? They must have left the chariot. But when he came out of the river, there they were on the chariot just as before. Asking himself, was the vision I had of them in the water an illusion? Akura re-entered the pool. There, Akura now saw Anantashesha, the lord of the serpents, receiving praise from Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, and demons, who all had their heads bowed. The personality of Godhead, whom Akura saw, had thousands of heads, thousands of hoods, and thousands of helmets. His blue garment and his fair complexion, as white as the filaments of a lotus stem, made him appear like white Kailasa mountain with many peaks. Akura then saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead lying peacefully on the lap of Lord Anantashesh. The complexion of that Supreme Person was like a dark blue cloud. He wore yellow garments and had four arms and reddish lotus petal eyes. His face looked attractive and cheerful with its smiling, endearing glance and lovely eyebrows, its raised nose and finely formed ears, and its beautiful cheeks and reddish lips. The Lord's broad shoulders and expansive chest were beautiful, and his arms long and stout. His neck resembled a conch shell. His navel was deep, and his abdomen bore lines like that, like those on a banyan leaf. He had large loins and hips, thighs like an elephant's trunk, and shapely knees and shanks. His raised ankles reflected the brilliant effulgence emanating from the nails on his petal-like toes, which beautified his lotus feet. Adorned with a helmet, bracelets, and armlets, which were all bedecked with many priceless jewels, and also with a belt, a sacred thread, necklaces, ankle bells, and earrings, the Lord shone with dazzling effulgence. In one hand he held a lotus flower, in the others a conch shell, discus, and club. Gracing his chest were the Srivatsa mark, the brilliant Kastuba gem, and a flower garland. Encircling the Lord and worshiping him were Nanda, Sunanda, and his other personal attendants, Sanaka and the other Kumaras, Brahma, Rudra, and other chief demigods, the nine chief Brahmanas, and the best of the saintly devotees, headed by Prahlad, Narada, and Uparichara Vasu. Each of these great personalities was worshiping the Lord by chanting sanctified words of praise in his own unique mood. Also in attendance were the Lord's principal internal potencies, Shri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, and Urja, as were his material potencies, Vidya, Avidya, and Maya, and his internal pleasure potency, Shakti. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains the Lord's potencies mentioned in these verses. Shri is the potency of wealth, Pushti that of strength, Gir, knowledge, Kanti, beauty, Kirti, fame, and Tushti, renunciation. These are the Lord's six opulences. Ila is his Bhu Shakti, also known as Sandini, the internal potency of whom the element, earth, is an expansion. Urja is his internal potency for performing pastimes. She expands as the Tulsi plant in this world. Vidya and Avidya, knowledge and ignorance, are external potencies who cause the living entities liberation and bondage, respectively. Shakti is his internal pleasure potency, Lahadini, and Maya is an internal potency who is the basis of vidya and avidya. The word cha implies the presence of the Lord's marginal energy, the jiva shakti, who is subordinate to maya. Lord Vishnu was being served by all these personified potencies. Might as well finish the last verse in the chapter. As the great devotee Akura beheld all this, he became extremely pleased and felt enthused with transcendental devotion. His intense ecstasy caused his bodily hairs to stand on end and tears to flow from his eyes, drenching his entire body. Somehow, managing to steady himself, Akura bowed his head to the ground. Then he joined his palms in supplication, and in a voice choked with emotion, very slowly and attentively began to pray. Om Ganachirmanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Jai Tanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In case you haven't noticed, we've made an extraordinary transition from the sweetness of Vrindavan to a scene of Aishwarya, majesty and opulence and power. We discussed yesterday about the Karuna Rasa, the rasa of pathos, deepest, heart-wrenching lamentation, pity, sorrow, all aroused by Krishna's departure to Mathura. We spoke a little yesterday about Sanatana Goswami's presentation of this Leela, in which Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes, or about which Brihad Bhagavatamrita describes, this Leela of Krishna's leaving for Mathura is so heart-wrenching, so poignant, so emotionally penetrating in terms of devastating sorrow and despair, that just by hearing of it, rocks and stones weep, trees weep, and lightning bolts shatter. Sanatana Goswami mentions that twice, helping us to enter into the unlimited emotional depths of Krishna's departure from Vrindavan. Indeed, as the chariot began to move away, we discussed that in more detail yesterday, the chariot with Krishna and Balaram seated on top with Akura, as that was happening, the hills around Vrindavan, certainly including Govardhan Hill, erupted with stone boulders and trees, just these rocks and trees just flew through the air. Rivers started to flow the opposite direction, leaving their vegetation on dry land. Even the animals began to weep and shriek. This scene of Krishna leaving Vrindavan is filled with the most intense, sweet suffering. And now, though, having reached the Kalindi, We hear Krishna touches it for his purification, drinking it, and Akura asks the two lords, please be seated on the chariot while he takes a bath. And then you're immersed in Aishwarya Leela. What happened to that sweetness, that unlimitedly sweet pathos of Vrindavan? The sweetness of the gopis' pleas for Krishna not to go. We've been so immersed in that. And now suddenly, it seems the scene has changed. So what has happened? There are two precursors to this situation, besides everything being Krishna's arrangement and his pastimes being arranged by his Leela Shakti. But there are two immediate reasons why the gears have shifted. The Acharyas explain that this trip to the Brahmahrada, the lake in the Yamuna, now known as Akura Tirtha, was part of Akura's strategy. You may recall yesterday we discussed how Akura schemed to get Krishna out of Vrindavan. How he, once Krishna was seated on the chariot finally, how Akura held on to Krishna, ostensibly to keep Krishna from falling over, because Krishna is so overwhelmed with grief and separation, impending separation from his beloved devotees. But actually Akura was holding Krishna to make sure Krishna wouldn't get away. And we also spoke about how Akura is noting that they have to make a quick getaway because the scene is so saturated with emotion that Krishna may change his mind. So taking permission of Balaram and Nanda Maharaj, Akura ordered the horses to pick up speed, and the chariot maneuvered away from the bodies of gopis who were throwing themselves around the chariot, trying to stop it, even trying to throw themselves under the wheels of the chariot to either stop the chariot or they would give up their lives because Krishna's leaving. So Akura had to manage through all that. He gets a bad name in some circles because of this. He didn't take permission of Mother Yashoda, excusing himself. This must be done. Please forgive me, but Krishna has business to do in Mathura. So some say that because of this, he was cursed by the residents of Vrindavan. And therefore, he couldn't stay in Dwarka all the time. He had to undergo exile in Varanasi. Thinking about Akura's strategies, and you'll definitely see those strategies in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, its rendition of Krishna's departure. Akura was very tactical. This arriving at the lake of the Yamuna, known as the Brahmahrada, was also a strategy of Akura's. He wanted to focus Krishna on Krishna's external mission, Prachanaya Sarunam Vanashaya Chudushkrita, annihilating the miscreants like Kamsa and his allies, and delivering the devotees the Yadus who were suffering so much under the reign of Kamsa. So Akura was strategizing, how do I get Krishna out of all this ocean of sweetness in Vrindavan? How do I get him focused on his mission in the world? So he thought that I'll bring him to the same lake where earlier Krishna had given the cowherd men, the older cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, a vision of Vaikuntha. And that will put things on a more majestic, on reverence track. It'll help to switch the mood, switch the scene, so that Krishna gets ready to deal with Kamsa. This same lake, Brahmahrada, is where Krishna had brought the cowherd men. Because after Krishna rescued Nanda Maharaj from Varuna's kingdom, and Nanda Maharaj was explaining to the older cowherd men what he saw in Varuna's kingdom, I can't believe it. First of all, I saw the opulence of Varuna. How extraordinary, how inconceivable. And secondly, I saw Varuna, such a powerful demigod, he's worshiping my boy. Can you believe that? So all the cowherd men started having a theological discussion. It happens sometimes in Vrindavan. That suddenly they realized, wait a minute, Garga Rishi said that your son is like Narayan, and he can even be equal to Narayan in terms of his activities. But now we are understanding your son is Narayan. Your son is God. But you see, as explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for these devotees deep in the bhava of Braj, even when they can see Krishna do something inconceivable, he reveals his power and majesty. It doesn't break their intimacy, their feelings, their relationships with Krishna don't become impeded by seeing displays of grandeur and majesty and power, as happened in the case of Vasudev and Devaki. After Krishna kills Kamsa, Krishna's going to want to incite their Vatsalya Prem, but they've just seen Krishna kill Kamsa, and so they're Vasudev, even he's understanding, this is not my son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna has to go through various maneuvers to get their parental feelings to start flowing. Oh mother, oh father, I could not spend my childhood with you. How lamentable is that? I failed in my duty. I haven't properly honored my parents. In this way, he began to tug on their heart with the help of Yogamaya. And in that way, finally, Vasudeva and Devaki became more intimate in their dealings with Krishna. But when the older cowherd men were presenting to Nanda Maharaj, your son is God, we understand now, their intimate feelings, spontaneous love for Krishna was not disturbed in the least. In fact, the acharyas explained that the older cowherd men began to petition Nanda Maharaj. Now, it's obvious your son is God. And it's also obvious that we're all related in this village. So, since your son happens to be God, and we happen to be your relatives, it's only natural that you get your son to give us some benedictions. It's a very funny mixture of, on the one hand, acknowledging that Krishna is God. On the other hand, they're saying, Nandamaraj, since your son happens to be God, by the way, can you arrange a few benedictions for us? So then Krishna asks, what would you like? Ask for me what you like. So one older cowherd man says, I want liberation. Another cowherd man says, I want Vaikuntha. This is like play. So, to fulfill their desires, to do a little sightseeing, and to also show them that Vrindavan is superior to Brahman, is superior to Vaikuntha, Krishna made a demonstration. Upon his commenting that people wander around in this world, they have no idea what their ultimate destination is. The famous verse, which has a double meaning. He's referring to conditioned souls who just take every moment as it is and have no idea where their life is going, what their next destination will be. And he's also referring to the residents of Vrindavan, who are at the pinnacle of spiritual achievement. Yet, in their spontaneous love for Krishna, they're thinking that Brahman is beyond, Vaikuntha is beyond. So Krishna wants to give them some education. And all while this is going on, the cowherd men, their affection for Krishna is not disturbed in the slightest. Their spontaneous feelings of love for Krishna are not diminished in the slightest. This is the nature of such intense love for Krishna as experienced by the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna took them to this lake, the Brahmahrada, and he immersed them in the lake, equivalent to immersing them in Brahman. Now generally, when you are lost in Brahman, it's very difficult to get out. You've merged. But because Krishna is doing this whole show himself, he put the cowherd men into Brahman, he merged them into Brahman, and then brought them out. And then it was time for the next exhibit in Krishna's sightseeing tour. You said you wanted liberation. Here's what it's like, liberation. Okay, let's move on. Now, exhibit B, Vaikuntha. So they got to see Vaikuntha. And then Krishna showed them the pinnacle of Vaikuntha, which of course is Goloka Vrindavan. And when he showed them Goloka Vrindavan, the cowherd men had an amazing realization. Wow, this looks just like home. So it's this same lake that Akrura brought Krishna and Balaram to kind of get them to focus on awe and power and might, get them ready to kill Kamsa. That was, again, Akrura's strategy. There's another angle also, endless angles, that Akrura was chanting Vedic mantras. And so in response to the official Vedic hymns that he was chanting, Krishna showed him Vaikuntha. The mantras that Akrura was reciting as he bathed in the water were awe and reverence mantras. And so Krishna reciprocated. Okay? Official prayers. Here's Vaikuntha. The description of what Akura saw in the lake, now known as Akura Tirtha. Is also attractive for devotees. We shouldn't think that these scenes of awe and power and might, we're not interested. We should be careful to appreciate all aspects of Krishna. While if one has some particular inclination, one holds on to that. I remember once at the BBT, I was there in Los Angeles. The artists were churning out picture after picture of Krishna with the gopis. And so Prabhupada, he complained. Who's filling my books simply with pictures of Krishna and the gopis? We want to see how Krishna controls everything. So the artists immediately shifted gears and came up with something else. In the Christian tradition, it's stated that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And we also accept that. First, you appreciate the Supreme as the Ishwar. Even that is difficult for people today who think that they're actually free. They don't understand there is no absolute freedom in the material world. There's only relative freedom, the same freedom that a prisoner gets in a prison. I think in Texas, you have capital punishment, right? Texas is famous for that. Death penalty. So, before the person to be executed meets his fate, he's allowed to ask for anything he wants for his last meal. So isn't that freedom? Should we exult in that kind of freedom? Well, this is the nature of freedom in material existence. It's always curtailed. It's always conditioned. It's minute. But we make such a big thing out of it. My last meal before I'm executed, I can choose what I want. Just live for the moment. Go with the flow. Now you wouldn't be able to say that. You'd be just thinking, this is the end. But the nature of the illusory energy is that in our day-to-day life, even though the end may come in any moment, we are content to feel that we are free or have enough room for our expression and fulfillment because we can make little tiny decisions like, which are equivalent to someone choosing their last meal before execution. It's a point that requires some deep thought, especially here in the land of the free and home of the brave. What is the nature of real freedom? Therefore, an essential first step in God realization is understanding Ishvara, Parama Krishna, that there is a supreme controller. And our so-called freedom in the material world is illusory. Srila Prabhupada dealt with that point in his first meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said he was making the point that as long as India is not free politically, as long as India is in the shackles of the British, no one will take Indian philosophy. No one will take particularly the message of Mahaprabhu seriously. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur smashed that idea, that political independence will actually make a significant difference. And he communicated such a sense of urgency. Krishna consciousness is so important, it can't wait for anything, whether political emancipation, this, that, come up with any material necessity. And it's not important enough to delay Krishna consciousness. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's imparting of that urgency to Srila Prabhupada. The urgency that comes when one realizes there's no freedom possible in material existence. Yes, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, but it's just the beginning of wisdom. What's the end of wisdom? The end of wisdom you see in Braj Leela, where the supreme Ishvar runs away from the stick of Mother Yashoda. As Queen Kunti prays, Krishna is more powerful than fear itself, yet Krishna shows he's fearful of Mother Yashoda's stick. So the end of wisdom is a spontaneous love for Krishna, in which Krishna agrees to come under the control of his devotees. But we agree, the beginning of wisdom is fear. That's intelligence, that you fear discipline. Of course, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you don't have fear of the police. But criminals fear the police. And in material life, conditioned souls are criminals. I remember in New York City, going to school, and depending on where the students were situated in terms of whether they were kind of future hoodlums or they were future scholars, they viewed the police differently. Policemen patrolling the junior high school, I guess it's called intermediate school now, they would walk by, and the rowdy students would start making, you know, mocking statements. They would start grunting like pigs, you know, clank, 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 because that was the their conception of what the police were all about. Those students who were up to no good, they would shrink away into the darkness when the police would approach. But then the goody-goody students, they "Hi, Officer So-and-so, how are you? How you doing?" You know, just in the neighborhood, there were mostly good people. There were a few bad kids. And so whenever the police car would go up the street, you know, the bad kids would all slink away into the shadows. But everyone else in the neighborhood, you know, they would, "Hey, how you doing?" They would wave happily. And they would sponsor bake sales and so on to support the local policeman's retirement fund and all that. So everything depends on your relationship with the Ishwar. Whether you're in fear, which you should be if you're a lawbreaker. But that's not the end of wisdom, thus the mentality of a lawbreaker. What about the attitude of someone who's cooperating? And more than that, what about someone who is in love with the Supreme Absolute Truth? So this is the completeness of bhakti. It can begin with fear. It can begin with awe and reverence. And then it goes to the point of evidencing love that even Krishna himself allows to conquer him. All right, are there any comments, questions? Guru Prasad Maharaj, any words of wisdom?
saying how there's no, how material circumstances don't affect preaching Krishna consciousness. You were making the point that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that material circumstances don't determine whether we can spread Krishna consciousness.
He said nothing, no material considerations are more important than the necessity for one to be Krishna conscious. That's what I said. No material considerations can cause a delay, whether it's political emancipation, this, that, the other.
Sometimes we've seen that if a country oppresses Krishna consciousness, they can be, a government oppresses the devotees, it can be quite effective, actually, for the preaching in that country. And
be quite what?
It can be quite effective. Like, devotees try, if devotees go to spread Krishna consciousness somewhere and they get really harassed and arrested and constantly, a lot of times that can actually affect their preaching, where they just give up and go somewhere where it's more feasible. Or like when Prabhupada came to America, it seemed like it was a good time. There was a lot of, if he came at a different time, things might have been different. So it seems like material circumstances do affect our being able to spread Krishna consciousness.
But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was referring to that. Don't delay or don't make the propagation of Lord Chaitanya's message dependent on material considerations. That's the point. And I can tell you from personal experience during of the Iron Curtain days that in many instances, devotees were much more Krishna conscious under persecution than once the Iron Curtain fell. In fact, there are some countries in former Soviet bloc in which now there are less active devotees than there were during the Iron Curtain times. And surviving older devotees from those days remember how they cried out to Krishna with such intensity. And also you have to consider what's the real reason for a change in material circumstances? Is it just material politics? Or could it be that due to the, as Prabhupada said, if my books are distributed in the Soviet bloc, the communists are finished. So it depends on your angle of vision. It was all politics. It was all done by revolutionaries. Or you could take another point of view. It was done by the propagation of Krishna consciousness. The political change was a side effect. So it depends on what your vision is. The fact is that when the Iron Curtain fell, even the CIA admitted they were caught off guard. They never expected it to unravel so quickly. So everything depends on your vision. Whether the political changes are caused simply by politics, or are they the side effect, material side effect, of the propagation of Krishna consciousness? But in any case, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's point stands, that Krishna consciousness is so important, it can't wait for political emancipation, independence, this, that, the other. Okay? Anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.